You're making one right decision today. You're listening to Handcuffs and Sage.
Three badass moms bringing you all the true crime and paranormal your heart desires.
I'm Red.
I'm Timo.
I'm Dre. And don't let your kids listen. Seriously, just don't.
Hey, it's Handcuffs and Sage.
Hey.
Ooh, this is Red.
Hey, this is Timo.
Hey, this is Dre.
Oh my goodness, it's been a hot second. How is everyone doing?
Good.
Well, I missed your faces.
We're back on the Zoom. So
I guess we still have a podcast. This is great news, you guys.
Yeah.
Great
news.
We did a 90s virtual reality or virtual reality, a virtual escape yesterday, and it was so fun. I love the whole escape thing, trying to put all the puzzles together. I feel like I didn't really contribute that much to this escape experience, but it was still a lot of fun to get together and dress up 90s style and do all that stuff. It was a lot of fun. I liked it. And my sister's, you know, there, and she is an escape room professional, right?
Oh, yeah.
She's done 140 escape rooms. She knows what she's doing, but this was completely different since it was virtual, and it was a lot of fun. I think it'd be so great if we could do one
in real
person.
Mm-hmm. It was my first experience for anything, and I totally was not looking forward to it. I was just like, I don't really want to go. All right, I guess I'll go. And then it was really, it was a lot of fun. I had a really good time, but what cracked me up about Stephanie is at the end, she pulls out her phone and she's like, so I entered tonight's information in my my spreadsheet, and according to my calculations, I would actually do a real one with you guys. I'm like, are you kidding me? What, girl?
Honey, she does not fuck around. She wants to get out of the room, okay?
I'm actually afraid to do it with her because I feel like I would royally fuck up in person and then be like, oh, you're such a disappointment, Dre.
No, you would be great. I think we have a really great group of ladies that would do really well in an escape room. Like, really. Well,
I think that's true, yeah.
Yeah, the dude that was, like, you know, the leader that, you know, made it up where he was our host.
Tyler, he was great.
Yeah, and he was impressed with us, so that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. So it was a really fun experience. We're going to mix it up, and before we talk about what we're going to be doing different on the podcast, I just want to remind everyone that they can be a badass. Leave a review for us on iTunes. That would make our day. Message us. We love hearing from you guys. If you ever want to share a story with us, you can email us at handcuffsandsage@gmail.com. And we're doing our spooky ooky stories that are coming out. So I hope people are enjoying that. Kara's is so phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I thoroughly love Kara's energy and the way she was telling her story. And even though we were drinking wine and things were... we're getting a little goofy. It was so fun to hear her story from her. So I hope people check it out, the spooky ooky stories. And so anytime you guys have like a true crime, paranormal, creepy story that you want to share on the podcast, we would love to have you. We would love to have you. So message us, share with us. We are all ears. Absolutely, 100%. So we kind of are doing something different with the podcast and we hope that everyone just loves it. I think it's a really fantastic idea. So we usually do a true crime story, that I talk about and then a paranormal story that Timo talks about. And so what we're going to do is a true crime story, but they're going to know the idea, the information behind it. And so we can all share and kind of give some insight on what we're talking about. And I think that will be a lot of fun, more interactive. Usually I'm talking about people being murdered and, you know, we're on Zoom and everyone's just staring at me like this, like eyes out of their head, right?
Right.
So we're going to have fun with this new way of doing it. So buckle up. I think it's going to be a really really good time. I think it's gonna be great.
Yeah, let us know what you guys think. I think we're gonna love it. I think you guys are gonna love it. And the little element of surprise between the three of us is gonna be gone. But I think we're gonna be able to have a little bit more fun knowing what the other's gonna talk about. So
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. We hope that you guys enjoy it too. Feedback is always great. I just wanted to update y'all. I check the Queen Mary website maybe 50 times a day. It is still closed. So that's the update. So
wild. Well, I sent you guys clip.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
But like, you know why I think is because I sent you guys that news article where it's going up for auction. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. Yeah. I mean, obviously.
Guys, how much money do you have?
Let's I know, right?
Together. Let's buy the Queen Mary. That's what right? I'm thinking at this point.
Like, we can't even afford staying in that special room, but we're like, yeah, let's just buy it.
That's right. We aren't ballers. We are cash friendly. Okay. Yeah. We don't have money. So, oh my gosh, if we miss out on staying in that room at the Queen Mary, my heart will just break. But I check it constantly.
Here's my dream. My dream is that like this amazing person who's super into the paranormal is going to buy it and it's going to be like renovated and it's going to be like 100 times better than what it is. And we're,
yes,
it's going to be the best. It's going to be the best experience. We're just going to have to wait a little longer.
Yeah.
Let's send out the positive vibes.
Yeah.
Also update, house is still haunted. So I have been talking to my daughter and she was saying to get blue sage, you know, get that through the house. We've got to, I mean, the hubby wants to burn the blanket. And he said that I have to promise no more seances in the house. I'm like, that had nothing to do with this situation. No. That was so long ago.
It was.
Get on my
level. I feel like, like now we should do the seance with the blanket.
Shit needs to happen now.
Oh,
gosh,
shit.
You guys, it's crazy. I took a video. I sent it to you guys. We were having a light show a little bit in the kitchen and my dog was crying and it was so scary. Crazy. I didn't even know what it was crazy. So that hasn't happened again, but we had a situation in the backyard that doesn't really make sense. And the front door keeps opening. So, you know, hopefully we survive. So send good vibes our way. You guys, this story.
Oh my God.
Is crazy. So I'm covering Peter Nygaard. Okay. And I have to say, this guy at first was giving me like Jeffrey Epstein vibes.
Yeah.
Right.
With Fabio. I think he's a little bit mixed up with Fabio.
Fabio Liberace. All right. We've got a mix. I think what he has done is just surpassing what Jeffrey Epstein has done. This is next level craziness. And what's so scary is it's because of money and power. He was able to do so much, get away with so much, just do whatever the fuck he wanted. And this case is ongoing, right? So we can follow up and kind of update as that is going on. We're talking about Peter Nygaard. There's a documentary out on Discovery Plus called Unseemly, which was great. There's a podcast, Evil by Design, which is fantastic.
Yes.
Timothy
good.
Sawa is the podcaster. God. He's a journalist.
And this guy
does a great job.
He put himself on the fucking line, dude, to do this fucking story too, which is so bananas.
He does. And it comes back to Peter having so much power. Mm. He has all the lawyers. He's doing all the shit he can do. Oh, and Peter's lawyer is the biggest piece of shit, terrible human being, like on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
His name is, he's the king of hell, right? He's got a throne with his name up top.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting for his ass, dude. His name is Jay Prober, and you know, all of his relatives hate him.
Dirtbag.
All of his relatives.
He doesn't want his little side gig going away. That's what it is.
Oh, I need to take a shower when I hear this guy talk. Okay. So I always like to start from the beginning, of course. So Peter Nygaard, his name is actually Pekka Juhani Nygaard, which is hard to say. So we're going with Peter Nygaard. Pekka Juhani Nygaard. Okay. That's a fun name, Peter. So he was born July 24th, 1941, which makes him super fucking old, y'all. Okay? He was born in 1941 to parents Eli and Hilka in Helsinki, Finland. Wow. I love to say Helsinki.
Who doesn't?
Helsinki. Helsinki. He was born in Finland. His sister Lisa was born on October 31st, 1942. She's a Halloween baby. Yeah. Maybe it's because she's connected to the devil. Okay, we should look into that. So his parents, Eli and Helka, were bakers, which I kind of love the idea of waking up every morning to fresh bread being baked. And then at 9, the family moves to Canada in 1952. The family is so freaking poor. They said it was a coal bin. They lived in a coal bin. They found a bin and lived in it. Mm-hmm. That's basically what was happening here. So no running water. They didn't have heat. They all slept in one bed. They were poor. Okay.
Yeah.
And I always want to know about someone's background and what made them who they are, right? This is a very interesting start. You don't hear things about, you know, his dad was this way or his mom was this way when he was growing up. And I tried my best to find things like that. So maybe throughout a trial, maybe more of that will come up. Because there's nothing. It really is interesting that there isn't anything there. Peter goes off to college to the University of North Dakota, and he comes home. He becomes a manager at this clothing company, and then he invests and later on buys that business from Nathan Jacobs. So he was a businessman. He saw an opportunity. He saved, invested, and then bought, okay? Peter had this thought that instead of focusing on the fashion of clothing, he said for the 25 and under group, he would actually make and really focus on the manufacturing, the supply demand for clothing for women 40 and up, that age range.
And so it was woman, basically.
The better woman, is that what you meant?
Oh, yeah, that's what I said. That's what I said. Yeah.
Because we know what we want. Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there is a clip of him talking about this age group, the 40 and up. And he said, you know, they have bigger bottom, smaller, flatter chest, and they need clothing. Like he talks about them in a really rude way. And that's who he's catering to, is this age group. So he invests in technology to have quicker and better manufacturing of clothing. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a clothing factory idea, right? Which is really interesting. So it wasn't about fashion. Kind of
brilliant if you think about it. I mean,
yes.
You know, I'm sure back at those times, everything was strictly handmade. So. It's just multi.
Let me make it clear. He's not dumb. He is a smart and scary predator.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. You couldn't have said it better.
Yes.
Douche McFuckface times 100, but he's not dumb. Okay. So by 1978, his business had grown and then had also grown. So he was now in the US. So not just in Canada, now in the US. So he's growing, he's making more money. You can find his clothes at places like Dillard's, Sears, Walmart, and Costco. If that gives you an idea of the kind of clothing he's putting out there. And they called him the polyester king.
Oh, so he totally is too.
But it nails it on the head, because we all know what Peter Nygaard looks like, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. He's greasy, gross, disgusting.
The hair.
Long hair.
But the hair isn't even like straight and feathered like Fabio. Fabio had kind of like hot hair.
It's not even feathered.
It's kind of like flipped. It's like oily and kind of like flipped back on both sides. It's so gross.
So gross.
So gross.
I think they described it more like Siegfried. You know,
yes,
like wild and like, you know, and the muscles are popping out and the shirt is open down his chest and the muscles gross. Are out. And,
yeah.
Gross.
And y'all know that I am very envious of people that can tan. This guy has got a level 10 tan going on.
Always. Oh my God.
And it's like orangey. He's kind of orange all the time, but he does. You know, live in the Bahamas, so I don't know, but it just makes me feel gross inside to look at him.
I don't know what he's doing.
So gross. Like, his skin is like a leathery,
so gross. Yeah.
100%. His business is growing. He's in these huge stores. He's now becoming an international success, okay? He's got money to burn. So, what's interesting is that fashion designers don't really see him, of course, as a fashion designer, right? He's just in that business. He's about quantity and supply. And the consensus is, throughout anything I've looked into, is that people didn't think he was like a great guy.
Oh, no.
People did not like him. Mm-hmm. People didn't want to be talking to him or around him. He was unusual. You know, he's just got this vibe of, ugh, just don't. You know what I mean? Gross. And people will say that very openly, that they thought that back when he was first starting, right? Peter ran his company with a serious iron fist, right? He mistreated his employees. He was constantly yelling and berating them. They were terrified of him. He had, I think, like 1,600 employees. They said when they knew he was coming, it was like all hell, right, bro? Their tummies hurt and they wanted to go home sick for the day. They did not want to be around this guy. There's a lot of video footage now of him doing this with a lot of his employees. And it really is sad. You know, you see that and you just go, you know, they had these jobs and they just couldn't leave. Right? What do you do? I don't know. It was very abusive, really abusive.
Yeah, he fully took advantage of their need for money and the lack of it in their, you know, in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And he just knew, like, he could treat them like shit and they would never leave.
Like, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? I can do what I want. And that is definitely the theme throughout everything that he does. He also made anyone that came to his like company buildings watch a video before they met him. I want you to think about this. Anyone who walked into a building had to sit down and, you know, they put in the VHS tape and they push play and then it was fuzzy. And then Robin freaking Leach comes on.
Oh,
you know,
God.
The guy from The Lives of the Rich and Famous, talking about what a swell guy Peter is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he, there's a montage of celebrities on these videos just talking about how Peter is basically God. So you watch this video and then you can, you know, go to his office and meet him.
That is like a cult about shit. That's like that is Scientology cult shit.
Yes.
The psychology of that. Like, if you walked in and someone's like, you need to watch this video before you meet him, I'd be like, I've got to go.
I got to go.
Right? Like, my gut would be like, just gross. Robin Leach, man, that guy, he really wanted to S Peter's D. Like, throughout the years, he was always doing, like, episodes about him, about his properties. He really wanted to, you know, make sweet, sweet love to Peter. And you could just tell.
I think it's because he knew the magnitude of how much he had, you know? Because he's around rich people all the time. And this is like, holy shit, this is a lot, you know? Half an island in the Bahamas.
Yeah, he was like the cream of the crop. You know? So like, if he needed someone on his side, it had to be Peter Nygaard. Like, that was the dude to focus on.
Yes.
So he sold himself to the devil.
Basically. So in this work environment, it is very fast paced. It seems like it is go, go, go. No mistakes were allowed. If you didn't respond to an email within a 24-hour period, you were definitely penalized for that. He had something called the Nygaard Dictionary that they had to read and follow. You could not say please or thank you when dealing with people. Which really tells you what kind of piece of shit human being he is, that he's telling his employees to treat other people this way. Don't say please, don't say thank you. He's so gross. Okay, so in 1972, one of Nygaard's accusers, Susan, was hired at Nygaard International, and it was actually a clerical position. She was 19 years old. Imagine yourselves at 19 years old. We don't even know what we're doing with ourselves. We're just babies, right? Peter's office and all of his buildings were in the front of the building with windows so he could watch the women work all day long, which is disgusting, right? And he did this in the building that Susan worked in. One night, Susan, at her parents' home, gets a call from Peter to go out on a date. He got her number by going through the employee records.
Oh my God.
Right. Which we know now. Right. Like, HR would straight have his ass, right? In this day and time. Not back then.
No.
He just went through like the little card do. Here's Susan. I'm going to call her up. He asked her at her parents' house because she's a baby, and asked her to a hockey game, which is like the most Canadian thing I can fucking think of. I mean, how is she supposed to say no?
Right.
Like, you have to.
But it seems safe too, you know, like that, if you're going to go do something with your boss, I guess, that's kind of like the safe thing to do is go to a huge stadium, watch a hockey game where everybody can see everybody, you know?
Right. But I would like to maybe have a suggestion for anyone listening. Don't do that. Yeah. Don't go. You're in a car, right? And you're not at home. So don't go. Okay. All right. So Susan said Peter picked her up in a white Pantera. He gets out of the car wearing a fur coat, and she said that gave her Liberace vibes. This is the look he's coming out with, right?
Oh my God.
A white Pantera in this full fur coat to pick up this baby child, and they're going to go to the hockey game. She says when they went to the game that he actually really didn't talk to her. That he was talking to like all the people around them, right? Like, he didn't want to engage one-on-one, but he did want to be center of attention to everyone there, right? So I think this talks about his personality and what he thinks about himself. On the way home, he asked her, you know, we can just stop at my place and have a drink, and then, you know, then I'll take you home. Here's a suggestion. Just say no. Right? If you're in this situation, you listen to your Jiminy Cricket and your oh fuck flag and say no. Okay? But Susan is young and she has no idea what's going on, and she said okay. Right? Probably because she was trying to be polite. Right?
Right.
Oh, you took me to a hockey game. Okay. Right?
Oh, yes.
Ugh. Right? And that's what women do. But back then, you're trying to be polite. So they get inside his place. She said that there's like a coat closet by the front door. He takes her coat and says he's going to get her a drink. Susan's looking out of these massive windows in his place. And she says, like, she's looking at this incredible view, right? Mm-hmm. It's just beautiful mm-hmm. looking at this view. She's having a moment. She turns around and she is nose to nose with Peter. Think about that moment for her. How terrifying that was.
Oh, God.
Just talking about it, just, I feel so bad for her. She's a baby, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and this is a predator, and he is nose to nose with her, and he immediately rips her blouse. She says that the buttons go everywhere. He grabs her hands, he pulls her pants down, and he pushes her down on the bench. To me, this sounds like not the first time, right?
Oh, no. Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. I mean, with everyone that we hear from, it's quick, it's forceful, it's violent, and he likes it like that, right? He is a sick mothered fucker. She says that Peter kept saying, like, 4 or 5 times,
oh, God.
Nancy Sinatra likes to fuck. What?
Oh, what?
What?
Ew.
What? Why would he say that? How is any of that making sense? And why does he say it over and over again? What the fuck? How terrifying is that shit? So he's saying Nancy Sinatra likes to fuck, which is just what? And then he does this terrible thing. He presses his arm over her neck. She's mm-hmm. down on the bench. She can't move. He's got his arm over her neck. She says that she is looking into his eyes. She can see his eyes. This is terrifying. He pries her legs apart. She said every time she struggled, he pushed harder on her neck.
Oh, my God.
Fucking awful. And remind you, she is 19 years old. She is a baby, okay? He rapes her. And then she said something that I didn't quite understand. Like, he rapes her, and then she said that he was then pleasing himself. So I don't know how that all worked. Do you understand what I'm saying? He was pleasing himself, and then she says to him, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And she gets up. She grabs her coat from that closet, and she books it. Mm-hmm. She's fucking out of there, right? So this is a terrible situation. It turns out that Susan's dad was head of the Vice City Police, and she felt like if she said anything, it would affect his job negatively.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Because this is 1972. That's right. It's always the woman's fault, no matter fucking what. And if this happened and it came out, it would hurt his job. And that was the situation that they were dealing with, which is awful. It really is awful, right? So she does not say anything. In 1980, a girl pressed charges against Peter, right, for sexual assault. And during that investigation, they find a book in Peter's residence.
Yeah.
Oh, they find a book, and in this book of whores, it's just lists of women's names with comments next to them. Susan's father gets called in at work, and they say to him, like assholes, why is your daughter's name in this book? Like she fucking did something wrong, right? Mm-hmm. They're investigating a sexual assault, and they're saying to him, why is your daughter's name in this book? And next to her name is a comment, needs more work.
Gross.
What in the actual fuck? What a horror story. Poor Susan. She can't tell her parents what happened. She's been raped. She's a young girl. She doesn't know what to do. And now her father hears this, and then he puts, needs more work.
Like she's supposed to enjoy being raped with a fucking disc on her throat?
Yeah. Like she's supposed to, like, review.
Get off on that? No.
Right. Could you imagine the comments my hubby would leave for me? Didn't move. Right there. Is she alive? Was she breathing? I'm just kidding. what is so sad about this dynamic is the dad doesn't talk to her about it. He obviously has the mother ask her about it. Susan tells her mother what happened. She assumes that the mother tells her dad, and they never discuss it again.
And that's what people did back then.
And that's what they did.
That's what
we're
they
not going to talk about it. We're not going to talk about it.
Yep.
Which is so awful. It affects your life forever. It changes who you are. You're a completely different person. So at the trial of the girl that did press charges, against Peter, she's on the stand and she refuses to answer any questions. So the thought is that he got to her, scared her. She didn't say anything and the charges are dropped. So nothing happens to Peter. In 1979, Casey Allen, she was young. She was beautiful. She went out dancing all the time with her friends. She was living life. She said that in that scene, people knew who Peter was, right? But nobody wanted to be seen talking to Peter because he had that vibe, right?
Yeah. Ew. There's that old guy.
Creepy. Creep flag all over the place. Turns out her friend Robin, she had been there with that night, left. She needs a ride home. And like out of nowhere, like a goddamn vampire, Peter shows up and goes, "I'll give you a ride home." And she's like, "Fuck." So she takes a ride with this guy. And again, listen to your oh fuck flag. Don't go, right? I know y'all don't have Uber. Do something else back in 1979. Like, I feel so bad. I just want people to know, like, when you have that bad gut feeling, listen to your gut feeling. Don't go, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so she says, yes, okay, you can give me a ride home. They're in the car. I don't know if it's the white Pantera. I don't know. They're on the way home.
Is the fur coat involved?
Probably. He's probably wearing three.
The chest is the fur coat.
Ew.
You know that's what it was. It just blended. Like the coat and the chest all blended together.
So this McFuck phase, he's driving her. They pass her neighborhood. Imagine what a terrible feeling that is, right? They pass her neighborhood. Mm-mm. He says, "I have to grab something real quick from my office." Okay. Oh God. Oh fuck flag. Okay. Peter has put like bedroom suites in all of his buildings. So we know that is at this location.
Yeah.
Okay. So they go inside and they go up and he pushes her down on this circular bed. Which is so fucking 1979. He's got a circular bed with shag carpeting and animal print, who the fuck, just thrown up all over the room. And he pushes her down. Casey says he was violent and forceful, right? He ripped her panties off. He put an arm on her throat, which we've heard before. And she said she made it very clear. She did not want to have sex with him. Okay. So we hear a lot of similarities in the stories. These girls are young. He's violent. He just gets off on the power, I think, of the that sexual situation. I think that's what it is for him.
Oh, yeah.
He's in charge, right? He's a real sick son of a bitch. In 1984, Peter buys a 6-acre property in the Bahamas. Okay. The house itself is 4.5 acres. And this thing is insane.
Oh my God. It's pretty cool.
The house is dope as fuck. It's okay. Okay to say.
Oh yeah. Okay. He has like a swimming grotto, like goes around the whole place. It's wild.
It's wild.
Oh my God.
The house has a Mayan theme.
Right.
It's like an amusement. That's absolutely what it is.
Yeah, like a water park.
Mm-hmm. Yep, a water park in the Bahamas. Just let that soak in. The property is bomb as hell, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. that's, you know, Robin Leach does that episode with him on this property. You see him in this situation. He's like walking around on the rocks in these short shorts and no shirt, like showing off this property to Robin Leach. Like, it's just so gross. The house is amazing. Okay. So at this point, Peter has his business in Toronto, Mexico, Saskatoon, Montreal, New York, and Winnipeg. He's making all the money. And I think as of 2020, his net worth was like $900 million, something like mm-hmm. that. In 1989, Pamela Erickson started working at Nygaard. She had heard it was like a really reputable company. It's not like you can Google it and look at Yelp reviews and shit, right? Mm-hmm, she just mm-hmm. heard, oh, it's a great company. They're always hiring. That to me would be a red flag, but she gets a job there, okay? She's put on something that Peter calls like his elite dream team. This team handles PR events, right? So they go to different cities all the time. They tour, they do fashion shows, and then they do parties for celebrities afterward, right? So imagine doing that constantly. That, I'm exhausted just thinking about that. That was her job, yeah. okay? Yeah. Pamela said that at times she worked with Oprah, Robin Leach, and President Bush, that this was a very fast-paced lifestyle, and it like never let up, okay?
Right.
It just went on and on and on. And by 2007, let me state here, Pamela started in 1989, y'all. By 2007, her doctor was like, you need to stop. Right. You were suffering from exhaustion. She was rough. And they had just finished a Dillard tour, and he wanted her to immediately start another two-week tour.
And like travel somewhere, right? Like go like yeah. on a plane far away somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's like, look, my doctor was like, no, don't do it. And he was pissed, right? And she did. She left. She left Nygaard. Mm-hmm. And she said that because of the exhaustion, because of the state she was in, she mm-hmm. was fucked up, you guys. She was really sick. She mm-hmm. she said it took like months for her to like feel like almost normal and then like take in what she had been through while working for him. And we'll hear a lot more of what those things are down the road. But she saw things, she heard things, she knew all about his business. And it was almost like unbelievable to her that she was there for so long. But then she was like, oh, maybe I know things that he wouldn't want me to share with people. And she actually felt scared, right? But it took her time to like feel well and get through that. But she really did fear him, right? So one day she's driving in her car and the car is having issues.
Oh my God.
Car's having issues. She gets it to a mechanic. I know. She gets it to a mechanic. And the mechanic's like, oh my God. Like if the car had like turned on, it's hooked up to a car bomb, you would have died.
Mm-hmm. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. And she was like, are you sure it's not the alternator? Like nobody expects car bomb. Oh my God,
disgusting.
As the issue your car is having.
So and imagine all the shit she saw in all that time that made it worth it for him to kill her.
Yes, it's insane. And it's like, you know, she's like, who else would want to blow me up except for Peter? And he has the money and means to, right? Mm-hmm, he doesn't right. care. He's going to do whatever he wants. And we hear from other people later on that he puts car bombs in other people's cars that he doesn't like or isn't a fan of. So this isn't like crazy. This is something he does. He has people do. This is insane, right? He's got ultimate power. He does whatever the fuck he wants. Now we're going to hear from Reva Steenburgen. And let me tell you, she's like my spirit animal, okay?
Oh, God, I love her.
She don't take shit, okay? Mm-hmm, she's mm-hmm. been through it, and she ain't gonna take it. She had a really hard life before meeting Peter. She wanted to be a model, and you could tell, like, you know, she's older now, and she's gorgeous. Oh, I can't imagine back in the day just gorgeous, right? She wanted to be a model, and I could definitely see why she'd want to be a model. She got to take modeling classes when she was 9, but by the age of 12, she is sent to go live with her father. Her father is a straight up pedophile, and I think we know what that means. And so Reva tells her mother, and 6 months later, her mom commits suicide. Okay. So her dad's a pedophile. Her mom kills herself. She is now homeless, living on the streets as a teenager. She starts dancing, right? She's got to make money. She starts dancing. And then she gets into Penthouse. She's a feature performer for Penthouse. So she's in several issues, and that's kind of how she makes her money. That is not something that she like wanted to do. She wanted to be a fashion model, right? She was just trying to do the best she could. One of her friends introduces her to Peter in 1991, and she is straight up like, my first impression of him is that he was arrogant and he was gross. Okay? And that was back in 1991. He just gets more arrogant and grosser with time. She was not a fan. Like, really, she didn't like him. Peter says to her he likes her look. He wants her to model. I want you to go to my warehouse, pick out some outfits you like. We can go to the Bahamas, do a photo shoot. You can be in the catalog. And she was excited. He says this over and over and over again to girls. I want you to be my model, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to put you in my catalog. And who doesn't want to hear that shit? Right.
Right. Right. And the Bahamas. Yes. Come on the Bahamas and come to my whatever it's, this fucking place would be called, you know?
But my Mayan house. Yeah, Nygaard Key.
Right. Nygaard Key. Mm-hmm.
So she was stoked, you guys. She was like, look, this is like the first good thing like that's finally, happened in a long finally. Time, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. She has been through it. So they go to the airport, and he actually takes her ID. And this is something he does with so many others. He takes passports and he takes IDs. And he's like, well, I'm just going to hold on to this for safekeeping. Like, no, bitch, that's mine. Okay? Don't right. fucking touch my ID. So they go to the Bahamas, and there's a woman there. He's got to do something. And he has this woman take her around for a tour. This woman is, she says she's a makeup artist and a friend of Peter's. And she basically tells Reva, look, you have to have sex with him. And Reva's like, no, I don't. I'm not going to sex with that guy. Uh-huh. And she's like, no, everyone has to have sex with him. Like, that's not a choice. I'll do you a big fat favor and I'll have sex with him tonight. I'll take one for the team, right? But you're going to have to have sex with him. So that night, Reva's sitting on the couch. She can hear them having sex upstairs, which is so gross. So gross.
And it's like weird, right? It's weird, not normal sex.
It's not normal.
Yeah,
there's nothing normal about anything he does. And she says she can hear him scream bloody murder when he finishes.
Yeah.
Everything about him is gross.
It just gets worse and worse.
Right? And then we do learn through, you know, so many stories and so many girls coming forward is that he is a full paraphilia. He is into every kind of sexual thing you can think of.
Yeah.
He is into pee play. He is into poo play. He is into all that disgusting stuff. Okay? He is a gross ass motherfucker. So
it was so crazy when the girls were like, yeah, I wondered why he kept feeding us, you know, like there's like so much drinking involved, but then there's like, yeah, keep eating. Yeah. Cause this motherfucker wants you to shit on him later. I mean, like, did he get any more disgusting? I was thoroughly shocked when I heard that and just like, I wanted to vomit. I couldn't believe it.
He's like feeding them. He's feeding them to stool in his mouth. I want y'all to take that in. This is why I want to know what the fuck happened in his childhood.
Right.
What the fuck happened? what's going on? Lots of people grow up poor and they don't become power hungry rapist predators. You know what I mean? What the fuck, dude? Anyway, okay, let's get back. Let's get back. Shit. So it's the second night and Reva's there and the chick says, look, I had sex with him last night. You have to have sex with him tonight. I can't do that shit again, right? They go to a casino and Reva's like, I'm so pissed that I'm being told I have to have sex with this gross ass guy, that she's like being as irritating and bitchy as possible at the casino, as bitchy as possible in the limo. Like she's creating a scene, right? Because she doesn't want to have sex with this gross guy. And that makes total sense to me. That would put me in a bad mood too. Okay. They go home. Peter has an employee take her upstairs to his room. Another thing about Peter is his employees know what the fuck he does and nobody says a goddamn thing. Okay. This has been going on for like 50 years. And employees just didn't say shit because they needed their jobs, right? Yeah. Because he lives in the Bahamas and the people working there are poor as fuck.
Right.
So he has
his employees. And he knows that desperate need because that's how he grew up. And he knew that maybe if he was given that opportunity back in those days, of course he would have done anything to not live in a coal shed or wherever the fuck he lived, right?
Yes. Right. A bin. It was a bin.
A bin.
The way I'm thinking about this is maybe because he was poor and he had such a hatred for himself and being poor that he's almost doing this to poor people as a fuck you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There has to be some psychology about that there. Anyway, so she's losing her shit at the casino and the limo. She is just not having it, right? Employee takes her upstairs. She gets upstairs. Peter grabs her wrists and he rapes her in a violent, terrible, motherfucking way. He screams at the end like she knew he would, which is absolutely disgusting. And she said, and then the next night it happened again. Like, she doesn't have her ID. She's in the Bahamas. She is stuck at this place. You can't just leave, right? Not like she can just walk away. There's a gate and Peter has to open that fucking gate and she's stuck and she's being raped. And this happens over and over and over again with these women. Just disgusting. In 1993, we have April Telic. She was Miss Canada. She was gorgeous.
Oh, April. Yes.
Oh, beautiful.
I have a side note on her.
Oh, a side note.
She played two different characters on Supernatural because she's an actress as well. And she was on Supernatural, which is so wild. And I went back and looked at the episodes that she was on. And I'm like, holy shit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. She was, gorgeous girl. Gorgeous girl. She gets the title of Miss Canada because of that title. You know, in the pageant system, then you're able to do other different pageants. So she ends up doing Miss Asia Pacific pageant. And April is actually friends with Peter's niece, Angela. Okay. And because Peter is like this businessman that has all this money, you know, and power in Winnipeg, and she's Miss Canada. He's saying to her, I'm so proud of you. You know, you made us all proud here. Mm-hmm. I want to sponsor your clothing. So when you go do a show or whatever, you're wearing Nygaard clothing. And so she's excited about that. That's great. April and his niece, Angela, go to the Notre Dame factory. Okay, this massive factory. So April can look at clothing so they can, you know, prepare for these showings. Okay. Angela leaves. So it's just April and Peter. And she's like, where's my room? And he's like, no, we're sharing a room. And she's like, you're rich. Why don't you have other rooms for people to stay in? Right. And she then makes it very clear to him. She goes, I am not having sex with you. That's not happening. And she says that he looked at her and he smiled. So she goes to the bathroom. There's a phone in it. And she calls the airline. When is the next flight? I need to fucking leave now, right?
Uh-huh.
Next flight is Tuesday. And it's a Thursday at this point.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. So she comes into the room from the bathroom. There is a deadbolt on that door, and she does not have the key. She's like, holy fuck, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. So she starts talking to Peter, which I think is a really smart thing to do, is that she's talking about Angela, about his nephews, people she knows, to humanize her, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, we have these connections kind of a thing. And Peter says to her, I can't let you go, right? He's not hearing what she's saying. And he pulls his disgusting tan leathery penis out of his pants.
Ew.
And he says to her, suck it. Ugh. Gross. So April's like, fuck this. She pushes him away. She tries to crawl over the couch, right, to get away. He grabs her. He rips off her panties. He rapes her. And that was the first night she was there. She was 20 years old, just a baby, and he was 52. Just
disgusting.
So fucking gross. She said it was like an act of aggression. It was violent, and he liked it. And we hear this over and over again, right? Just so gross.
You guys,
so
quick question. So yeah. I just wonder, you know, if if say like somebody said, suck it. And the girl went to pretend and just like clean it off. The shit off.
That's what I would do.
I just want to hear that story. You know, yeah. I just want that to happen so bad. Right? I feel like I would just want to rip it off with my bare hands. I don't, I don't know. I mean,
shit's going to be ripped off.
Shit's going to be. I went to a very dark place.
And now Dre wants to bite off penises. So now that's happening.
I don't know what to tell you.
So the next day, she wakes up. An employee comes into this room. So an employee knows what's going on. Give me a break. The employee comes in, brings in food, gives like this beautiful spread to Peter. And then what she gets, she says, is like an apple and a lemonade drink. She drinks this lemonade, but she thinks it might have been drugged because she feels really fuzzy and out of it. And she like sleeps for hours, maybe in like a day. Like she's not quite sure. There's a loss of time there. And when she comes to, Peter is asleep and she really doesn't know what happened during that time. Right. And I'm kind of glad she doesn't, to be honest. She wakes up, he's asleep. Okay. She gets to the phone in the bathroom and she calls Peter's nephew. Okay. She's like, you need to fucking help me. And he says to her, I'm coming to get you. And she's like, it is locked up. I don't know what you're going to do. He says, if I have to smash through the front gate and the glass and get glass all over my uncle, then so be it. I'm coming to get you, right?
Yeah.
I'm coming.
Let's do this.
I'm coming. Let's do this, right? April looks over and she sees, like, miraculously, that there's a key in that deadbolt. She's like, oh, fuck yeah. She grabs her coat. She fucking books it out of there. But then she realizes she's in this massive factory. I get lost at Costco. I don't know, like, this poor baby, right? She's there. She doesn't know how to get out of this massive factory. Mm-hmm. She's freaking out, right? She's obviously afraid that Peter's going to come after her too, right? She's trying to find the exit. She sees a light. She realizes it's a security guard. And she's asking the security guard, where's the exit? Like, I need to get out of here. And he's like, oh, I don't know why you're here. And I need to call Mr. Nygaard. And she's like, he's asleep. You are going to be in trouble if you wake him up. Like, she used a very authoritative, like, voice, right? Which was so smart, which was great. Like, she didn't play, like, victim. She was like, your ass is on the line if you do that. And he said, okay, the exit's over there. She gets through that exit. The nephew pulls up and they fucking get away. She was there for 3 days in that room with
him. My god. Yeah,
awful. Fucking awful. So by 1996, Peter Nygaard has this massive business in Winnipeg in different locations. Everyone knows who he is, right? He's got this massive reputation. And a crazy story comes out, and the reporters at the Winnipeg Free Press are just taken aback what they hear. They've always heard rumors, right? They said that, you know, you hear rumors, you don't know if they're true, but then three women come forward and share their stories and shit gets crazy. Okay. That's where we're going to stop it here. We're going to learn all about this. There's so much more to hear about and that to come.
Oh my God.
This is a predator to the max, you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so horrible, gross. It is horrible. But I think it's really, really important to talk about. I feel so sad because in all of these stories, we hear, you know, that a lot of these women felt like they couldn't share their story and that this was their fault. They felt shame and guilt, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we now live in a time, which is, I think, great, where women can, I think, come forward more freely and share their story and be believed. And I think that that is really great. It's been really terrible to be a woman up until like the last 3 years. So at least we have that going on, right?
We have that.
So this is very, very interesting story. I'm glad that we all kind of like looked into this and kind of did it together. I think it's just so maddening that this person was out doing this for so long, but he's not out right now. So that's good.
Yeah. When,
that's great news.
I did both. I watched Seemingly and I listened to the podcast, and as gross as it was and how like how much I didn't want to watch it, you have to watch it. Like it's like looking at a car accident. You have to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a straight up car accident because it's so fucking awful and he got away with it for so long.
So long.
I had a really hard time watching it. Not even gonna lie, I had a really hard time watching it because I could see myself in these women and see like that feeling of like complete loss of control and what the fuck can I do? Absolutely nothing. You know, and what did I do to get myself into this position? We say this all the time, right? We joke and we laugh now because we're like alive and we're fine. And we're like, wow, how did I even get to be 40 years old? Because holy shit. You know, we joke, but like, no shit. Right?
I hope to make it to 40.
Oh, girl.
Cross your fingers. I want to keep it real. You know, when I was a freshman in high school, I was raped by a classmate. I did not tell anyone. I became a shell of a person, right? I was not functioning. I blamed myself. This was someone in my friend group. I felt like if I said anything that my friends would be mad at me, right? That they would take this side. Yeah. I never told anybody.
That's the worst thing at that age. It's worse to not have your friends than to friggin' be violated like that. Yeah.
It was a piece of me died and I didn't want to go to school. I would say that I was sick all the time. He was in my friend group. I had to see him every day. And I failed all my classes. I just was not doing well. And that's when I made the transition to Canyon. And I really had to pull it together without any help from anyone because I didn't tell anyone. And I'm, you know, a couple years from 40, that I have just shared my story just within the last few years, because it really was, I just want to pretend that didn't happen. Right?
Yeah, that's exactly
that's
what
not
happens.
Real. Yep, that's not real.
Because it's not real. It's easier if it's not real.
Yeah. That's right. And that's what I did for so long. But it changed me who I am, how I perceive men, you know, how I am, you know, how I think about sex. It completely changed who I am. A lot of these women, they didn't tell anyone. And anytime I hear them say that, I'm like, yeah, I get that. You just want to pretend everything's fine. Nothing happened. Mm-hmm. So it really is such a sad story that there's so many women in this situation that he hurt, but I'm glad that something's being done about it now. So try to, I mean, look at the positive about right. it, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really great that we're talking about it. I'm very excited about Timo's topic. Holy mm-hmm. shit. I can't fucking wait. So buckle up. This shit is fantastic. I had never heard of this guy.
Oh my gosh. So I know.
Great. I love it.
So we're going to my beloved New Orleans tonight. Ooh, now when you went a few years ago, Red, did you do a ghost tour? Did you do a vampire tour? What did you do?
I did three tours. I think I remember this story, just a very small bit of this story.
Okay.
I did not put that name to that story. I don't uh-huh. remember uh-huh. that name, but it's so effing interesting. They have a picture of the home and I was I remember that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Today, you know, we're going to go right into New Orleans. It's not a stranger to vampires. Anne Rice's vampires were based in New Orleans. She lived in New mm-hmm. Orleans for many years. She has a witch book series where the house the house that she actually lived in was the family home in the witch series, which I love. She's my
what?
Most favorite.
I didn't yeah. know that.
She's my most favorite author of all times because not only does she do a vampire series, but she also did a witch series. Then later on, she did a vampire series, a werewolf series. Then she did a angel series. So she's kind of like gone like off like the grid to like all, but the vampires were her the beginning. And then
if I can make a suggestion, she should do a Sasquatch series because I would be all about that. Squatch live.
Yeah.
Like a Squatch family.
You were going to say aliens.
Ooh, aliens that would be
or Sasquatches. I'm open to both.
She could probably do a really good alien series.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
All right. And then True Blood. Come on. True Blood wasn't actually in New Orleans. It was in Bonton. But in Bonton, yeah. they actually did do New Orleans here and there. They threw it around. Mm-hmm. And then the spinoff, the originals from the Vampire Diaries, that was based 110% in New Orleans, which I wasn't a Vampire Diaries fan. I started out as an Originals fan, and then I went back and started watching all the Vampire Diaries and just absolutely just fell in love with it. That was like my all-time most favorite show ever. So New Orleans is like the hub of vampires, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, you could take tours in New Orleans about vampires. They have like special tours just for vampires. There's mm-hmm. little cafes, there's bookstores, like it's just like the mecca of vampires.
It's great. Mm-hmm. It's great. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to talk about an alleged actual vampire that resided in New Orleans in the 1900s, and his name was Jacques Saint Germain, and I will refer to him as Jacques, I think, along the way, or the Comte, because he was also the Count of Saint Germain. But it kind of gets, like I just said right now, I kind of got confused because you'll know why down the line.
Yes.
So I think I'm just going to say Jacques for right now because that was his unique name. So Jacques arrived in New Orleans in 1902. He moved into a absolutely stunning, beautiful home in the French Quarter on the corner of Ursuline and Royal Street, and that's where we were talking about. No one knew like where he had come from, but this guy, OMG, he was charming and he was eccentric and he was charismatic, and just like everybody was like, who is this guy? Like, OMG.
They said he was like a hottie toddy with a naughty body, and he cracked me up. Is there's like a picture, like drawing of him, and I'm like, okay, I guess you say he's hot. Maybe he was hot for 1902. But they said he's got this great personality, Like he's just charismatic.
And then I kind of think of Lestat in, because that's how yes! that was in The Interview with the Vampire. He was very eccentric, like he liked to dress up and he was smart. And it's because we all know if you're a vampire, you more likely you've lived centuries and centuries. What is there to do? Well, you can learn. You can learn all this shit.
Learn.
You have, all you have is time. All you have is time. Mm-hmm. And of course, you just become an expert at anything. I would love that. I would just love to read all the books, do all the things.
You know that scene in Interview with the Vampire where, you know, he's walking around and he's just begging death to come take him?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I could see that.
Yeah. I'm like, it's so wild.
Come take me, please.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm going to be a vampire, I want it to kind of go like that, you know?
Yeah. Like that. Oh, we can go on for hours about that movie and those guys. But okay. Mm-hmm. So he basically won the hearts of like all the New Orleans high society, all the elite, and they just dug him, man. They like dug him.
Oh, they ate him up. They loved this job, man.
And then he started to gain the respect of like all these like people that, you know, you needed to gain respect. And this will play into the story a little bit down the line. So not only was he like charismatic and all that stuff, but he was fucking gorgeous. He had tons of money and he was a ladies' man, of course. Okay. And he loved to entertain. Like that was his jam. Like he was like, I'm throwing parties. And he would he would just throw these lavish dinner parties. And while he was like throwing these parties, you know, the guests learned that he was so intelligent. He had all these talents. He spoke so many different languages. Like this guy was like the jam. And
yeah. I love that he knew, they said he knew everything about everything.
Yeah.
Like ask him anything and he would know.
And he'd have all these stories that he would tell, and he would tell them so descriptively, like it was like he was in the room or he was there when it happened. It was so crazy. Like, and maybe he was. Yeah.
Maybe he was. Maybe he's having this full-on crazy like dinner party to the nines, like all the time. Like he's not eating.
Oh,
that's how I feel like right now in my life. Okay. Right.
Yes.
I understand that. All right. Yeah, I'm having people at my house and I'm not eating.
We're just sipping on
I'm like Jack.
Right. So one of his main things was that he claimed that he was a direct descendant of the Comte de Saint-Germain. Okay. Okay. So he was like the big boss dude, like in the 18th century. He was, you know, really well known. He was a fine gentleman. He had direct ties to King Louis the 15th. Okay. So like, if you know the king and the king is your pal, you've made it. Okay. So the Comte was born in France in 1710. And just like Jacques, he was a very charismatic, charming. He was a French historian. So this dude knew everything. He was a philosopher, a writer. And he had a lot of famous besties, like some like Casanova. Who knew Casanova was actually a real fucking person? Come on. Catherine.
She said, who knew he was real?
Like, he's like, oh, he's just a Casanova. Well, there was a real fucking Casanova. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine the Great. And just down the line. It just goes down the line. And then, fuck, he was an alchemist. Now, if you don't know what alchemy is, it's kind of like magic and science, like had a baby. It's like wild shit, right? So
it's cool.
He could basically turn lead or some type of metal into gold.
Mm-hmm.
And then he could take these like useless rocks and basically make diamonds out of them. So
he's doing Jesus tricks over here, you guys.
He was a gazillionaire. Yeah. And because of this, I mean, like, oh, I need a couple $1,000,000. I'll just make golden diamonds over here and I can just like live forever. You know, it's like so wild. Then they also said that he was in search of the elixir of life, which I think is kind of like the fountain of youth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm also looking for this elixir.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So some say that maybe he already had that because he never seemed to age past 40. He always kind of stayed the same as the years went by. He was always this gorgeous young 40-year-old. And it was like, what the fuck?
Like Paul Rudd, dude. Paul Rudd does Paul not Rudd. Age. He might no. be a vampire, y'all.
Might. Oh my God. Or
I'm into it, man.
The Illuminati's in there somewhere, and he maybe sold sure. his soul to the devil. Maybe.
Look, there's something yeah. like this.
Yeah.
But I love you, Paul. Love you, Paul Rudd.
Oh, I love him so much. So just like Jacques, he told fucking descriptive stories beyond belief, but these fucking stories were like Cleopatra and fucking Jesus. Yeah. And they're like, mm-hmm. what the fuck? So,
and his stories were like, I was there with them when yeah, this like, happened.
I partied with like, Cleo and I partied with
that
Jesus.
Was a couple hundred years ago. Yeah. Yeah.
I saw Jesus turn the you know, the blood into wine and all this bullshit, right? So one story goes that in 1760, he was at the home of King Louis XV, his bestie, his mistress, who was Countess Van Gregory. And she was sitting there talking to him, and she's kind of like, I know this dude. I've met this dude. I met this dude when I was like a young, beautiful, young, hot thing, like 50 fucking years ago. And this guy looks exactly the same way as when I met him back then. He has to be like his son or like his grandson mm-hmm. because, dude, like, mm-hmm. no, it's not possible. But she must have brought it up because she comes to find out that he is that guy that she met 50 years ago. And she's like, what? And he's like, yeah, actually, I'm like over 100 years old. And like, just kind of like, yes.
He's like, I'm actually 147 years old to be exact.
Right. And then actual sightings, like recorded sightings of the Comte, go back as far as, like we said, Jesus. There's recorded sightings of this guy, like way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, I think at this time, kind of shit got down. Like maybe he was, oh God, now the king's bitch knows who I am, and maybe something might be going on.
The king's bitch.
Was the king's bitch. Hey.
Oh shit, the king's bitch knows who I am. Time to pack the fuck up.
So he packed up his shit and he went to Germany, okay, where he supposedly hung out there with Prince Hess in this wonderful castle in Germany. And it is said that he died in 1784. But his death record is kind of shady. It doesn't seem right. And supposedly it was written by a priest, and the king like gave this priest orders, write this motherfucking death record out right now. Mm-hmm. And
just
it just
fill this
doesn't
form out, stamp it, it's all mm-hmm. good. No, right. You don't need to see the body.
He's my friend. It's okay.
Exactly. Right.
Wink, wink, wink. He did.
Trust me, he's dead.
Oh my God.
So, which was cool because maybe he promised something to this prince, like, do this for me and I'll do this for you, or who knows, right? So it mm-hmm. was rumored that he really didn't die, duh. And then he just left Europe and headed off to the New World, where he stepped foot in New Orleans. So this is the Comte. Mm-hmm. This is not Jacques. This is the Comte. So he was in Louisiana. We really don't know much of the story at this point. We know he lived there at one time, but now we're going to move 200 years into the future when his descendant, of course, just shows up in New Orleans. And of course, that's Jacques. Did you guys find anything mm-hmm. like between that time, between Jacques and the Comte, like where he was in the New World or what happened?
I did not see. I was looking like, where would he be? Right. Where would he be? Yeah. You would think that there'd be like maybe another story, you know, sighting uh-huh. of this, uh-huh. you know, very charismatic person. Yeah. I didn't see anything like that. Yeah. So I don't know if he was like maybe in a coffin or a cave, sleeping, maybe. Right? I don't,
winter's
now. Who knows? Maybe he was just making a shit ton of gold. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But there is a space. What is it? Like 140 years.
Right.
A long time.
Long time.
You know, what I did find interesting was that, you know, the French philosopher Voltaire actually said that the Comte was a man who knows everything and who never dies. You know, it's like, this is a French philosopher here. So,
really cool, interesting stuff.
I know, that's very cool. I saw that too. That's just bananas. Okay, so now we're, Jacques has arrived. He's, you know, the man. Everybody's loving him. And then people are like, dude, like, he's saying that he's a descendant of this dude, but they look so much alike. Like, they look like they are the exact same person. And whenever someone would bring that up, he would not confirm nor deny that that was the truth. Like, he just kind of like changed the
subject. Like, why didn't he just say, nah?
Yeah.
He should have just said, nah. Not to say.
He didn't want to lie.
He's my great great uncle. Like, God, what are you talking about? So stupid.
The genes are really strong in my lineage. We all look the same. I don't know.
Right, right. Okay, so here's this beautiful man who has charmed his way into New Orleans by throwing these bomb-ass parties with the finest foods, the finest wine, entertainment, and prestigious guests. Come on, because everybody wanted to go to these parties. And like you said earlier, Red, the strange thing, he was never seen eating. Like, everybody else is like fucking eating the bomb ass chicken and the bomb ass whatever boar that they have out on the table with the apple in its mouth and shit. But he's like in the corner eating like a spoonful of oatmeal and some like chicken breast.
That's right.
And he's doing the weight loss challenge with you.
That he is. He's doing the fat burn blitz, and he's like, y'all need to get on this with me because I'm losing like crazy.
What spoonful of oatmeal? I didn't read that.
Called
over my head.
So, kind of like Tebow in this sense, he was always seen with a glass of wine in his hand. And
what are you trying to say, Tebow?
And it was like vampire. in this fancy palace. So that's how he was known. Like, he didn't eat, but he always had his drink on, and it was in this fancy chalice that he would, you know, whatever. So the women of New Orleans were like drawn to him. Like, he was like, yeah.
He was a panty dropper, dude. Like,
fuck yeah.
He came into a room and they were like, oh, where'd my panties go? Yes. You know what I mean?
They were just drawn to him because he was just so gorgeous. He had fucking money. He was so popular. Like, why not? Like, why not be attracted to this guy, right?
Just do it. There's no video or pictures. You can do whatever the fuck you want in 1990.
Just like us.
Nobody will find out your business. Yeah.
No social media. Come on, rock it.
No, do it.
But then things started to get kind of creepy and kind of strange and kind of like, what the fuck is going on?
Kind of so, like Nygaard-esque.
Yeah. So one night while out and about visiting. So one night while out and about visiting some bars along Bourbon Street. Now, that was one thing that he loved to do. And the elite kind of like frowned upon this. How dare you go to those little bars in Bourbon Street and hang out with
Bourbon Street? It's like, because it's the fucking best. It's filthy, dirty, disgusting, and I love it.
It smells like urine. It smells like pee. Oh, people are drunk.
Yeah, sugar. Don't get it mixed.
It's like a good time.
It is dirty.
Yeah.
Can you imagine
back then when there was like no like sewage and all that shit?
And horses. People have horses.
Fucking shit. You know, horse shit everywhere.
It's disgusting now. I can't imagine. I know, right? But it's so fantastic. Gross. You know what I mean? It is.
The fun outweighs the gross.
It like brings out like this, oh, I can do anything here.
Oh, you know what I mean?
It's that
so
feel?
Fun. Yes.
Yeah.
So fun.
Let's go to New Orleans.
Yeah. Let's do it. When this fucking pandemic is gone, we're going.
All right, sweet. Whatever.
So he hooks up. He finds some like beautiful young chick, right? They're not sure she was a lady of the evening or not, but he takes her back to his place, and they're gonna have a nightcap, just a little nightcap, right?
They're gonna talk about their political.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's what we would tell our kids when they were little. Mommy and daddy need to talk about our political views, and nobody's gonna knock on the door.
Oh my god, this
is very important. This is important conversation for mommy and daddy to have.
And now, you know what, you guys? I'm freaking out because now that I'm thinking about it, he fully pulled a Nygaard, or a Nygaard pulled a Comte, a Jacques. And the reason why I say that is this lady was in his place, and I'm sure this guy had treasures galore, artwork, things, and she's just walking around fucking admiring all this stuff, like, holy shit. Next thing she knew, she was nose to nose with this motherfucker, and he's biting her fucking neck.
To me, that sounds hot as hell.
Why is this sexy, but it's not with Nygaard? It's super sexy when he does it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, Jay. Okay. We're talking about a hottie toddy Jag. Okay.
Yes.
He just knows all the things. He's not wearing stupid white fur coat, and he's not like leather tan. I kind of love the bite thing. Like, maybe that was just like, ooh, let's get into it. And she was
I think at that moment in time, she kind of like was like, oh, like, this is not right. This is not happening.
Yeah. Does it feel good? Why does this feel good? I'm just kidding.
And most vampire stories, that it's kind of like a, you know, like an orgasmic situation, but luckily for her, someone fucking knocked on the door and he kind of got distracted. So what does she fucking do? She jumps off the motherfucking balcony from the second ass floor and screams her head off and runs to the police station. She's like, fuck this guy. Could you imagine? Like,
it must have been a bad situation. Must have been bad for her to do that.
Yeah.
Because this is like a lady of the night, right? Think of all the crazy fucked up shit she has to do in 1902. That's so gross. Like, all of it's gross.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And this guy with all this money that people love, he must have done something that was fucked up.
Yeah.
Must have. For sure.
And it said that, you know, the people down below on the street, like, just kind of figured, like, maybe she just fell. But yeah. But she fucking hell-tailed it to the police department. She's like, fuck that. So, you know, she's in there. Her fucking neck is freaking trickling with blood. She's, you know, hyperventilating. She's crying. She's screaming. She's like, oh, my God, this guy did this to me. Da-da-da-da-da. So they're like, really? Okay. Well, let's go over there and find out. Now, there's a couple different stories, but I'm going to tell the one that I like the best. So they get there. He's there. And they're like, okay, Jacques, what the fuck? Like, what are you doing? Like, why are you with this chick? What did you do? And he's kind of like, what? Nothing happened. Everything's fine. What if she's a fucking prostitute? You know, whatever. I didn't know. You know, whatever, right? So they're like, all right, sleep on it. Come talk to us in the morning.
They basically were like,
right now,
they were like, you're a man, she's a woman,
exactly.
You're obviously telling us the truth, so you sleep here, and you know what, we'll follow up, maybe,
right? Yeah, just on your time, you know, just come in,
right?
Come in and talk.
You know how crazy they get, you know how crazy they are,
right?
You don't know what they're talking about.
Ugh.
With the blood trickling down her neck, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Poor chick. She's crazy. Right? So guess what happens? He doesn't show up the next morning.
I'm shocked to hear this news.
What?
No way.
So they go over there. They're like, he has to be hungover. He has to be doing something. Like, there has to be an explanation for this. Well, when they got here, his shit was gone. He was gone. They're like, he's gone. He is gone.
He left a note that said, bye, bitches, and left.
But he didn't have time to take everything with him because, you know, he had to go in the middle of the night. So they did find some shit going on.
Yes.
I love it.
What did they find? They found some blood-stained tablecloths. And these stains seemed like different occasions. So it wasn't like one big bloody massacre, it was like, oh,
right,
this one's like kind of 5 months old. Oh, this one's kind of like 2 months old. Right. Then they found clothes that were bloodstained, but there was different time periods of different clothes. What the fuck is going on? Then there was absolutely no food to be found in the entire place. There were no plates. Uh-huh. There were no utensils. But what did they find? They found many, many, many bottles of this red wine that they thought they were looking at.
Yeah, they thought it was wine.
Yeah. So two different stories. One was they were entirely filled with human blood, or it was like half blood,
right,
half wine mix, you know, like his little cocktail.
With a mixer. It's a mixer. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So he was gone, never to be heard from again. And now, you guys, I don't know how far you looked into this, but I did a deep dive into this, and this is fucking bananas. Yeah.
So I know what you're gonna say.
In the 1970s, this French actor just like fucking said, "Hey, I'm Count Jacques Saint-Germain, and I can do this and I can do that." And he was like basically like straight out like believed it like 110%. Now they do have a side to side, unfortunately.
Yeah,
he looks like a porn star, and we have like the history book.
It's like a drawing. School.
Yeah, yeah. So drawing, you really can't tell between the two. But I saw some of the movies. I didn't watch the entire movie because it was in French, it was subtitled, and it was really bad. I couldn't sit through it. But there was a documentary where he's there with a scientist guy. They're kind of like, say, dude, if you can do this shit, prove it. We're gonna put you on camera. And he fucking does, you guys.
Yeah.
They brought the fucking lead. So he did not have any access to that. And he's doing his whole alchemy kind of thing, whatever. And it fucking turned into gold. What?
Yeah.
Bananas.
Yeah. Yeah. What? It's probably him. It's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then in 1983, he kills himself. So
he did. All gone.
Really? Was he done with the 70s? Did he decide he's going to go take a long nap and come back in the 90s? Mm-hmm. I don't know. We don't know.
Look, why would you kill yourself in the 80s? That shit was tight, dude.
I know.
He should have waited until like 2000. That's a year to kill yourself. Oh,
right. Yeah. And this guy was kind of like, they also had this, they kind of had this part on that documentary where he's in a booth with a bunch of people, and it's kind of one of those big grounded booths and cameras facing them, and he just has all these chicks hanging out with him.
Yeah.
It's the modern day Jacques. He was really acting like it's so, you guys,
and they were drawn to him.
Oh my God, it's so wild. It's so crazy. And then he started
say how he killed himself.
I'm sure it did. I didn't really look into it.
I wonder, you know, I wonder if he killed himself. Do you know what I mean? Like a wink, wink.
Right.
Like, when is he going to pop up next kind of a thing?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I love this shit.
Good thing you brought that up, because today they say he's still in New Orleans, that he just hangs out amongst the tourists. He wears a black leather jacket, and he calls himself Jack. So he's like modern day Jack now. And there has been sightings. And I listened to a podcast, and they did have local teens that were out skateboarding or whatever. And they ran into this strange ass dude that, what the fuck is he wearing? Like, who is this? And it wasn't like, you know, you have all the eccentric people in New Orleans that dress up like vampires because that's what they love. It's like Anne Rice and this and that. They just kind of felt like, this guy is different. Who is this guy? Yeah. And I looked and looked and looked, and I tried to do such a deep dive on any type of modern day rando sightings of this, and I could not find anything. It was so wild. So
interesting.
I'm just gonna have to I'm gonna have to keep on looking into it. So was he the Comte? Was he indeed the most famous vampire in New Orleans? Well, I don't know. I think maybe I'd love to think that that is the fact.
Let's have fun. Let's have fun here. Let's say absolutely. And he just,
I think,
you know,
so.
Yeah.
Is awesome. So
I have a couple of fun facts for you, y'all. In 2005, NOVA, so N-O-V-A, was formed in New Orleans. It stands for New Orleans Vampire Association. It provides support to the self-proclaimed vampires that live in New Orleans. And there's over 50 of them currently in this club.
Oh, shit, I love that. Okay,
and
wow.
They claim that they have a medical condition that requires them to drink human blood to sustain life, but they get it by willing blood donors. And there have been many, many documentaries of modern day vampires in New Orleans that show the full on like transfusion drinking kind of thing that they have going on. Yeah, I'll forward some to you guys. It's bananas. It's like they are actually drinking human blood. And Dre, I don't know if you can talk about this a little bit or not, but like you really can't do a lot of that because I think there's like something that can like really hurt you if you drink a lot of human blood. So
it can make you sick.
Like a couple of drops, like maybe like a teaspoon here and there. It's not like they're sucking and sucking and drinking and drinking and drinking. But it's
that's
wild.
Wild.
Now this is the fun part.
Insane.
I've only seen like half of the first season just because I had other priorities, other shows that I wish to watch, but now I have to go back. And I have to, it's been so long, I'm going to have to start from day one again. But Outlander, you guys watch Outlander?
I need to start that over again too.
No.
I stopped.
What is that?
Outlander is kind of like a time machine time traveling show where this woman travels through different ages and time from like this Celtic stone in Ireland or Scotland. I'm kind of grabbing,
paraphrasing,
kind of like grabbing it and like, you know, whatever. And it just follows her through her life of, time traveling through all these different centuries and different shit. Yeah. But there is a character named the Comte of Saint Germain on Outlander, and it's loosely based on the actual historical figure. So I don't know. I haven't seen it. I didn't want to like watch any clips because I didn't want to spoil it for when I go back and watch. But I mean, come on. It's like a really fucking popular show and this dude plays a character in it. So I'm excited. I'm excited to go back and watch that. So there you go. Jacques, the Saint-Germain.
Yeah.
This is such super a legit. Fun story. It's so interesting. Yeah. I love that you did it. Oh, I love it.
I know. I love it too.
For sure, it was him. He's not dead. He'll come back. He'll come back and throw a party, y'all. Don't worry.
After 2020's officially over.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. He's staying safe, you guys. are you guys ready for the
badass story of the week?
All in sync.
Yep.
Wonderful. Perfect. All right. My badass is actually an animal today, and it's because I was just like blown away by this crazy video that I saw. Travelers were making their way through Antarctica through Gerlach Strait, and they saw something incredible unfold right in front of them. First of all, there was a pod of orcas all over the place. It was like probably like 15 of them. It was amazing, and they're just in awe over this, right? And then all of a sudden they noticed this tiny little penguin just like coming up and out the water and like just swimming for his little life over and over and over again. And it's like this long chase, right? This itty bitty little penguin is running away from an orca.
No.
And that orca is about to have some lunch.
Just wanted
a little snack, guys. Little penguin is like jumping up and out the water and just like up and out. And it's like a 2 minute like ordeal, right? And then all of a sudden you see this little thing like this boat, the little buoy, it's like, you know, air filled. The little penguin jumps and just falls back into the water. Oh shit.
No.
The orca's gonna get him. he does this like two or three times, and then finally everybody's like all just looking at the penguin. Please, please don't eat him. Come on, little guy. Come on, get in the boat. And so he makes one last jump straight into the thing, and then this guy grabs him, and then he's safe. He makes it onto the boat. There's like all these people standing there, and they all make way. And there's like 10, 15 people on this little boat, and they just all make way to like, you made it, little guy. You're alive. And I just, my heart is melted. He's so cute. He's a badass. He kept good on job, trying, and he got away from that ugly orca. So good job.
Oh my God. Could you imagine
doing it, like, penguin?
Please save me.
Did you see what just happened? I know. I was on my eye, guys.
I almost died. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's like a little video of, you know, him like just kind of flapping his wings and like, holy shit, that just happened.
Y'all see that shit?
Yeah,
the guys are never going to believe this back at the pod or whatever the fuck they are. The guys are never going to believe my story.
Right? Never.
Cute. Good badass story. The penguin's a badass. I love it.
Mm-hmm. So cute.
Hit us up on, we have all the things. We have Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, the website, handcuffsandsagepodcast.com. Our email is handcuffsandsage@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. You can be a badass. Leave us a review on iTunes. We dig it. Check out our Patreon page. You guys can help support your favorite gals and get some fun swag in return. We absolutely love hearing from you. Share your stories so we can do some spooky ooky tales with y'all, and you guys can personally share it, which is a lot of fun.
And if you haven't checked out our TikTok page, we've actually posted some really fun stuff, so check it out.
Oh my gosh, you know what, I should post the video of my light show so y'all can
see. Please do.
Oh my God, let's do that. Do that for sure.
Yeah,
you have to do that.
I think we should. Let's get some feedback on that, because it was just such a weird crazy moment. So I think I should post that. We can see what other people think about the video.
Very interesting.
We appreciate you all. I hope you all enjoyed the show today. Here we go. And remember, we do what we want. Bye.
Handcuffs and Sage is hosted by Red, Timo, and Dre in a shitty guest room in Los Angeles.
Theme music is Leave Now by We Are Wasted. Cover art done by Megan Winchester.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Show us some love on iTunes. Be a badass and do what you want. Until next time.